Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Wednesday, March 1st. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Renner, Lower Emerge as Top Voter Getters in Mayoral Primary. This is by Maria Nagel out of Bloomington. Incumbent Mayor Tari Renner and Alderman with a far different view of local government priorities will square off in the city's April 4 consolidated election in the April 4 consolidated election for the city's top office, with Renner garnering 3,667 votes, which is 48.15%, and Ward 1 Alderman Kevin Lower getting 1,450, or 19% of the vote, they emerged as the top finishers in the field of five mayoral candidates in Tuesday's primary election. We've made great progress in fixing our streets and infrastructure. Our budget is stable, and we are growing the local economy in many, many ways, said Renner as he watched returns Tuesday night at Anjou above 220 East Front Street. So I am very happy to receive this vote of affirmation by the citizens, but obviously you don't take anything for granted, he added. Lower's campaign platform called for refocusing tax dollars on essential services such as public safety, which would be police, fire, and first responders, and infrastructure. He also campaigned for putting a stop to public subsidies for city-owned entertainment venues, such as the U.S. Cellular Coliseum and the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. Let's roll up our sleeves. We've got a lot more to do, said Lower, about moving on to the April 4th election. If anybody wants to join the team, we'd be happy to have them. Speaking at his watch party at John H. Krause Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 454, Lower said he voted early last week and spent the day of the primary at work, selling cars at Anderson Ford in Clinton. I don't think most people realize how much work goes into a campaign before Election Day, he said. Going into April 4th, Renner, who teaches political science at Illinois Wesleyan University, said he wants to reach out to the people who did not vote for him and say, "What can I do to earn your vote?" Lower and Renner beat three other candidates, former radio talk show host Ian Bain, retired Bloomington firefighter Robert Fike, and Ward 8 Alderman Diane Howman. Renner lost only one of the city's 52 precincts, precinct 38 on city's northeast side. According to the Bloomington Election Commission data, Fike won that precinct by 10 votes. Both Renner and Lower were first elected to city offices in 2013. Renner was mayor and Lower was an alderman representing Ward 1 on the city's south side. Renner wasted no time in taking on his remaining opponent. Alderman Lower has literally zero record, said Renner. He has never gotten an ordinance passed, not one. I've got hundreds passed. And he has never worked with his colleagues to try to even propose real solutions. Other vote totals were Bain, 1,067, or 14.01%, Fike, 788, or 10.35% votes, and Howman, 643, that's 8.44%. Of course I'm disappointed, said Howman. However, this campaign process for the mayoral primary will make me a stronger councilman, so I won anyway. The public speak The public spoke. They voted their conscience, said Feig. I wish the top two vote-getters all the luck in the world, and will do everything I can to help them to get a good mayor here in Bloomington, because I am still a resident, and for a while, and will be for quite some time. Bain could not be reached for comment, but on his Facebook page he posted, quote, I've only lived here in Bloomington for a little over 2 years. I'm very humbled by the support during that time on the radio and in this campaign, and sorry that we finished third in the race, killing any chance of common-sense conservative solutions to the problems in Bloomington. Quote, the liberal Republican political establishment aligned with the Democratic Party to push us out and succeeded. For that, I am very sorry. The 7,637 votes cast accounted for 15.31% of the city's 49,870 registered voters. BEC Executive Director Paul Shannon had anticipated a turnout Tuesday of about 15% based on the city's consolidated elections, typically drawing a voter turnout of 20% to 25%. So I would say, as a primary with only the mayor's race, the turnout would go down some, said Shannon. I guessed about 15%. Election judges at First Baptist Church and St. John's Lutheran Church said turnout was steady but slow all day. It's exactly what I expected, said Kathy Conley, judge at St. John's. Obviously, I wish it were larger turnout, but I'm glad for the people who did come out to vote. Sue Anderson, a judge at First Baptist, said the only surprise was how many voters chose electronic ballots, perhaps because they know this ballot would be simple and it would be a good chance to take the plunge. I always vote. I've heard it's a close primary, said Megan Wood after voting at First Baptist. The article closes with pictures of David Probe, Bloomington. From David Prober, it's a picture of the current mayor, Terry Renner, and a picture of Bloomington Ward 1 Alderman, Kevin Lower. We also have pictures of mayoral candidate Mike Feig. And we also have a picture of Alderwoman Diane Hoffman on the right as she's talking to a volunteer, Georgine Chisel, during the watch party Tuesday at Michael's restaurant. In weather print, we have an article from Kevin Barlow out of Bloomington. One person was killed in Ottawa, and crews are looking for people trapped in debris in nearby Naplet. In the wake of one of multiple tornadoes spawned Tuesday by a string of severe storms that raked northern Illinois. The LaSalle County Nursing Home in Ottawa was badly damaged shortly before 5 p.m., and the Ottawa Fire Department confirmed there was one fatality. Elsewhere in the city, which is about 70 miles north of Bloomington-Normal, further details were not available late Tuesday as emergency services assessed the damage. Tornado touchdowns were also reported at Washburn and the Toluca and Rutland areas as the storms followed a line roughly from northwest of Peoria to Cook County, dropping heavy rains and hail up to the size of baseballs, according to the National Weather Service. Several buildings also were destroyed in Oregon, a town about 20 miles southwest of Rockford. National Weather Service meteorologist Amy Seeley said she didn't have a full count of how many tornadoes were reported because some sightings may have been from the same system. Besides the tornadoes, there was a lot of hail reports across the area, Seely said. Ottawa had baseball-size hail also. We are starting to get some flooding in Will County. OSF St. Elizabeth Medical Center in Ottawa was treating two patients with storm-related injuries, said OSF spokeswoman Libby Allison on Tuesday night. One patient was in critical condition, the other was in serious condition, she said. The LaSalle County Nursing Home on the southwestern edge of Ottawa sustained heavy damage, but there apparently were no injuries at the site. Patients at the nursing home were evacuated to a nearby school. We got hit hard, but everyone, including residents and staff, are safe and accounted for, said nursing home officials in a Facebook post. Your prayers are greatly appreciated. A woman answering the telephone at the nursing home told the Associated Press that several residents reported bumps and bruises, but no serious injuries. Trees and power lines were also down in the area, and Ameren, Illinois, reported widespread outages in LaSalle County. Emergency crews have been sent to Naplet on the southwest side of Ottawa, where several structures were heavily damaged, and there were fears people were trapped under the debris. Jamie Enderlin of the National Weather Service says the tornado was first reported in the southern section of Ottawa and moved northeast before dissipating near the town of Morris in Grundy County. Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner activated the State Emergency Operations Center on Tuesday night to coordinate state agencies giving aid to storm victims. Meanwhile, Advocate Eureka Hospital in Eureka and OSF St. James John, W. Albrecht Medical Center in Pontiac reported treating no patients for storm-related injuries Tuesday evening. In Woodford County, buildings in Washburn were damaged by a tornado about 5:30 p.m. There were no reports of injuries, and officials reported several branches and wires down. The National Weather Service also reported a tornado near Toluca in Marshall County. There were no immediate reports of injuries or damage associated with that storm. A rope tornado was reported about 6 p.m., 5 miles northeast of Rutland, but there was no report of damage, according to the Weather Service. The National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma, cautioned Tuesday that 44 million people from Arkansas to Ohio face some risk, and that the area from the Missouri Boot Heel into Indiana faced a moderate risk late Tuesday and early Wednesday for severe weather normally seen later in the spring. The Wednesday forecast for Bloomington Normal calls for a 50% chance of showers and temperatures falling to about 40 degrees. Including at the conclusion of the article is a person with two objects in their hands. This photo was provided by Tim Greeden, who shows his baseball and a hailstone. Baseball in the right hand, hailstone in the left, that fell in the backyard of his home in Ottawa on Tuesday. They look the same size. State Farm reports a $1.2 billion operating loss for 2016. This article is submitted by Lenore Sabota out of Bloomington. State Farm Property Casualty Companies reported a pre-tax operating loss of $1.2 billion for the 2016 year in figures released Tuesday, but the company's net worth still increased. That compared to a pre-tax profit of $1.9 billion in 2015 and $3.4 billion in 2014. The last time State Farm Property Casualty Companies had a pre-tax operating loss was 2011, a year when five catastrophes, including Hurricane Irene, affected results, according to State Farm spokesman Dave Phillips. The pre-tax operating loss that year was $160 million, he said. A $7 billion underwriting loss, the difference between premiums collected and the claims period, in the auto insurance business was the major contributor to the 2016 operating loss. In 2015, loss in that category was $4.4 billion. Investments and other incomes of $4.4 billion, increase of $400 million over the previous year, helped to offset the underwriting loss to reduce the overall operating loss. The State Farm Group ended the year with a combined net of $87.6 billion, which was up from $82.7 billion at the end of 2015. Total figures for 2016 include a $5.5 billion underwriting loss on earned premiums of $61.7 billion compared to 2015's underwriting loss of $2.1 billion on earned premiums of $58.6 billion. Steve Weisbert, Chief Economist and Senior Vice President of the Insurance Information Institute, said Tuesday that State Farm's figures are in line with other insurance companies, with what other insurance companies are experiencing, and are not cause for concern. State Farm in particular, and the insurance industry in general, is very well capitalized, said Weisbert. Even in a year when they experience, for them, a small loss, it's not something to worry about. We are a company that's been around for almost 100 years and have seen worse. Phillips said, "We continue to look at the future from a position of strength." He said the company takes seriously being properly prepared to meet the needs of policyholders. 10 property casualty insurers and 2 life insurers make up State Farm Insurance operations. The auto insurance business represented 63% of the combined net written premiums of the property casualty companies. Several factors played into the underwriting loss in the auto insurance sector, according to Phelps. The number of claims and the payout on claims and property damage and medical costs from accidents had a significant impact, he said. As technology evolves, the cost to repair that technology increases, said Phillips. And as the economy has improved, people are driving more and buying vehicles with newer technology, explained. That has been a trend in auto insurance across the country for all insurers, said Phillips. Weisbert said vehicle repair costs have been rising faster than the rate of inflation in several years, citing the increasing amount of electronics, including navigation systems and cameras. It's almost like you're driving a high-powered smartphone with some wheels on it, said Weisbert, as a higher percentage of cars on the road contain accidents avoidance technology. It is hoped they will help reduce the number of accidents and costly claims, he said. Company-wide, State Farm auto insurance rates increased 5.1% in 2016, according to Phillips. That trend continues into this year, he said. We are not alone. Despite the hit from auto insurance, Phillips said some of the other lines have had a good year. Homeowners, commercial multiple peril, and others in that category showed an underwriting gain of $1.6 billion. State Farm had a realized profit for the 6th year in a row in banking and the 4th in a row in mutual funds, said Phillips. The stock market has certainly helped with the strength of State Farm, he said. State Farm's increase in net worth included $4.2 billion increase related to the property casualty company's unaffiliated stock portfolio. John Farney, a senior vice president, treasurer, and chief financial officer, said, "Our focus of putting customers first for nearly 95 years continues to underscore our position as the leader in auto and home insurance and a leader in individual life insurance." And Steve Smedley submits a picture of the State Farm headquarters building as it was in 2014. Our last page one article is out of Washington. Trump declares it's time to join forces to fix U.S. problems. This is presented by Julie Pace of the Associated Press. Washington, D.C. Heralding a new chapter of American greatness, President Donald Trump stood before Congress for the first time Tuesday and issued a broad call for overhauling the nation's health care system, significantly boosting military spending and plunging $1 trillion into upgrading crumbling infrastructure. Striking an optimistic tone, Trump declared that time for small thinking is over. Trump's address came at a pivotal moment for a new president elected on pledges to swiftly shake up Washington and follow through on the failed promises of career politicians. His opening weeks in office have been consumed by distractions and self-inflicted wounds, including the bungled rollout of sweeping immigration and refugee executive order that was blocked by the courts. Trump, who typically relishes flouting political convention, embraced the pomp and tradition of a presidential address to Congress. He stuck largely to his script, made occasional overtures to Democrats, and skipped the personal insults he often hurls at his opponents. The president was greeted by enthusiastic applause as he entered the House chamber, though it was filled with Democrats who vigorously opposed his policies and many Republicans who never expected him to be elected. Most Republican lawmakers have rallied around him since the election, hopeful that he will act on the domestic priorities they saw blocked during President Barack Obama's 8 years in office. Topping the list is undoing Obama's signature health care law and replacing the sweeping measure. Trump offered a basic blueprint of his priorities, including ensuring that those with pre-existing conditions have access to coverage, allowing people to buy insurance across state lines, and offering tax credits and expanded health savings accounts to help Americans purchase coverage. He suggested that he would get rid of the current law's requirement that all Americans carry insurance coverage, saying that mandating every American to buy government-approved health insurance was never the right solution for America. Making a direct appeal for bipartisanship, Trump turned to Democrats and said, "Why not join forces to finally get the job done and get it done right?" Democrats, now firmly ensconced in the minority, sat silently while Republicans stood and cheered. Some wore blue pro-health care buttons that read "Protect Our Care," and dozens of Democratic women wore white in honor of the suffrage movement. Trump was vague in his call for tax reform, another Republican priority he promised. He promised massive tax relief for the middle class and a reduction in corporate tax rates, but glossed over how he would offset the cuts. The president also urged Congress to pass a $1 trillion infrastructure package financed through both public and private capital. "The time has come for a new program of national rebuilding," he said. Trump sent unexpectedly mixed messages on immigration, one of his signature campaign issues. He pledged to vigorously target people living in the U.S. illegally who, quote, threaten our communities and prey on citizens, end quote. But he told news anchors before his speech that he was open to legislation that could provide a pathway to legal status. And he told Congress he believed, quote, a real and positive immigration reform is possible, end quote. First Lady Melania Trump sat with special guests who were on hand to amplify the president's agenda, including family members of people killed by immigrants living in the U.S. illegally, the widow of former Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, also sat alongside Mrs. Trump, a reminder of the president's well-received nomination of Federal Appeals Court Judge Neil Gorsuch to fill Scalia's seat. The majority of Trump's address centered on domestic economic-focused issues that were at the center of his presidential campaign. His national security message centered largely on a call for significantly boosting military spending, taking strong but unspecified measures to protect the nation from radical, quote-unquote, radical Islamic terrorism. Underscoring the human cost of these efforts, Trump honored Chief Special Warrant Officer William Ryan Owens, who was killed in a raid in Yemen during his first days in office. Owens' widow sat in the guest box with tears streaming down her face as the crowd stood and applauded at length. Owens' death, as well as the killing of several civilians, has raised questions about the effectiveness of the raid. Pushing back, the president said Defense Secretary Jim Mattis had assured him that the operation generated large amounts of vital intelligence that will lead to many more victories in the future against our enemies. Trump also voiced support for NATO, but reiterated his call for partner countries to meet their financial obligations to the military alliance. Trump has previously called NATO, quote-unquote, obsolete, setting some allies on edge about his commitment to the partnership. Okay. And at this point, we will take a short break and return for the second half hour of the Pantograph for Wednesday, March the 1st. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Look forward to coming back in the second half. Bye-bye.